Welcome to the VA Tourism Podcast, and I'm Kojo Benton Williams. The VA Tourism Podcast is dedicated to Africa's travel and tourism industry, where leaders from the private and public sectors get to talk to us. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, and Google Podcasts. In today's episode, African aviation expert and managing director of ZA Logix, Ogaga Ojo, takes a deep look at the state of Africa's aviation sector and its ability to bounce back post the pandemic. He throws a spotlight on South Africa's troubled flag carrier, South African Airways, and the latest happenings at the airline. Ogaga is of the belief that the continent's national tourism boards and the aviation counterpart need to collaborate in order to grow Africa's share of the international tourist arrivals.
Ogaga Ojo, good morning, and I'm coming to you from Accra, and how are you doing?
Good morning, Kojo. It's a pleasure to be on your show. Greetings from sunny South Africa.
Okay. It's sunny out there. I thought it was cold.
We are definitely getting into winter, so I'm enjoying the last few days of summer, as we like to say. But luckily today, we've got a very bright and warm day.
Okay, and I hope that once you have the sunny day, you're taking more vitamin D, right?
definitely, as much as we can.
Exactly. You know, thank you for coming to the, you know, the tourism podcast. And let's start with the conversation. What's your assessment of the aviation industry now in Africa, respective transition, COVID, post-COVID? Maybe you can give an helicopter view of it, and then probably you zoom in on Africa as an expert on, you know, in that area.
Well, I mean, you know how I like to kick off, Kojo. I really like numbers. And, you know, we just finished the first quarter of this year. Last year, we know that it was such a difficult year for global aviation, but of course, Africa had its own nuances. So the year effectively closed with about 69% reduced demand in Africa. This was interesting because it was compared to about 66% globally. And the level of demand we're seeing right now is actually back to 1998 levels, which is quite telling. On the other side of the equation, of course, a capacity, you know, dried up due to many restrictions and fears of travel. And in Africa, this is about 61% compared to 57% globally. And all of these moves actually resulted in the loss of profitability of about $2 billion for African aviation, which is, of course, quite concerning. And there's a ripple effect on connectivity, which fell. There's an impact on the GDP contribution of air transport to Africa, which normally sits at around $55 billion, which we're expecting to reduce by about $37 billion. So definitely not a great time, but I think more qualitative features perhaps, and we have both very much been involved in this journey, which in many respects is actually like going to a new destination, just this journey of COVID and how the market has had to respond. We respond as we learn. And I think overall, this has been a period of reckoning for African aviation. We've had to confront and face ourselves with some very tough discussions about the sustainability of this air transport ecosystem. I think that from a transition perspective, you know, as Africans, we know what resilience means. We know how to adapt. And I think from an aviation perspective, of course, Africa entered with in a very weak financial position at the close of 2019. But we've seen some interesting things. We've seen a lot more coordination. We've seen a lot more cooperation. But I think what makes it interesting in our journey forward is that we will have to plan as African aviation in parallel to the vaccine rollout. So compared to other parts of the world, our vaccine rollout program is quite conservative, and the expectations are unfortunately disappointing. So we are now having to plan the restart of this industry and the recovery with the variable of not knowing when vaccines will be available to the mass traveling public of African citizens and residents. So I think that makes things quite interesting from our perspective. And of course, as we know, the expectations are that African aviation will recover to 2019 levels at around 2024, 2025, but that varies per country. And of course, if markets have a strong domestic segment, that recovery is expected to be a lot quicker, as is in the case of South Africa.
Okay. So that's, I think you've clearly enumerated some of the things that, you know, the aviation sector in Africa, West Africa already, because most of them were going through precarious, I mean, situations, exactly. Apart from Ethiopian, most of them. Now, you did mention, use a key word, sustainability. Look, we are having this conversation at a time that, again, experts, and, you know, I heard Shawn Mendes when he spoke on John Howard's show, when he talked about the fact that, can we keep on bailing out these airlines, these failing airlines? What's your position on that?
Look, the economic argument can be either way. And I think what's quite interesting about COVID, if you take Africa out of the picture, almost every country with any semblance of a aviation ecosystem have had governments support their industries. And I think it's quite interesting because it brings together a whole different spin to the notion of government support for sectors, government support for national carriers. I think the Middle Eastern airlines were actually quite validated by COVID responses of various governments, because for many years, various countries, particularly the USA and some European countries, have criticized them for perceived government support. But in the last 12 months, governments have supported many, many countries. And of course, Africa is at the tail end of this from a, you know, financial support perspective, although about $31 billion has been committed to African aviation, but the actual disbursement of those funds or commitment of those funds is another story. So I think that the national carrier notion is a very hot debate. And I have a few views. I've always said that I couldn't really be bothered by ownership structure as long as the governance is in place and the entities are allowed to be commercially, to make commercial decisions rather, and can run independently. It might be a little bit of a, a naive or optimistic approach, but we have seen cases where private airlines fail due to many factors, including incompetence and poor governance. And you see this in South Africa, and you've seen it in South Africa. And you have instances, albeit few, where government-owned airlines perform well. So I think it's really about ensuring that the enabling environment for aviation is supported. That, in my opinion, is a role of governments. Whether they have direct interest investment in the sector, a government's role is to create an enabling environment for all parties to contribute. And in that respect, that means private and government businesses. Because if you look across the African continent, across different aviation ecosystems, there are many respects where private business and government business are involved in aviation. And therefore, I think government's role is to create an enabling environment and address issues around policy, misalignment, around infrastructure, around financing gaps and access. That is the role of governments. I'm not comfortable when it seems that governments get involved in the operations of airlines, because unfortunately we just do not have good examples of that working.
Okay, so I mean, if I'm to narrow the conversation on days where you have to have a flag carrier, obviously destination, you know, need air links, which is fine, but do we necessarily have to have a flag carrier, or we can be able to give freedom rides and all of that? Because from what we are seeing, a number of the airlines, I mean, 2 months ago, Air Namibia went down, SAA is down, a number of them are still going through some financial difficulties, Kenya Airways, Run Air, I mean, name it. And I was just adding to the point that at what point in time can we say that enough is enough, and then if we can be able to implement the Yamoussoukro Convention, which gives a lot of, you know, opportunity for us to interline, you know, as opposed to just people protecting their airspace.
I think we need to break this conversation into bite-sized pieces. So firstly, let's talk about corporate restructuring and business rescue administration. In different jurisdictions, there are different mechanisms available legally, right? So in South Africa, we have what we call business rescue, which is, you know, very similar to Chapter 11. In other markets, you do not have that mechanism. You only have, you know, provisional liquidation. And I think we need to, when it comes to this matter, we actually need to look at it per jurisdiction. The case of Namibia is different to the case of South Africa. Business rescue allows entities, all entities, to enter into a period of restructuring whilst having moratorium on their financial obligations. And it's a very strict process, at least in theory, where there must be a commitment that this entity, the first check is to see whether this entity can be salvageable or it must be liquidated. After that test is done, all parties need to come up with a plan to save the business. And generally that means that the business will emerge a lot smaller if it is to survive. And you know, we also need to acknowledge that some of these corporate restructuring mechanisms are not legally available in many jurisdictions across the region. So that's the one element. Every industry has, you know, ebbs and flows, but are there mechanisms for corporate restructuring is another discussion. On the point of flag carriers, it is not realistic that 54 countries can have 54 flag carriers. I do think that the term flag carrier, though, is going to take on a different meaning, because what we are seeing, to your point, is that yes, in many jurisdictions, the national government-owned carriers are not operating. However, new airlines, smaller airlines who have been growing over the years are now essentially carrying those flags. And that's why I revert back to my point of the role of a government is to create an enabling environment for economic activities for all. And we will have new flag carriers that just don't happen to be government owned. So I do think that from an economic priority perspective, there's a lot of debates around government bureaucrats, political analysts, economists about how do we allocate our fiscal resources, which have been severely constrained, and should we be bailing out airlines? So I think the debate is necessary because you cannot pour money into a black hole. I'm not against government support for certain sectors, as we've seen around the world, but it needs to come with strong conditions. I mean, if you look at the case of Lufthansa, their government was, the German government was one of the first to provide financial support. And you know, reports stated that the carrier actually was apprehensive of receiving further support because it came with conditions that would impact how they run their business. And I think that's a very interesting point that perhaps we need to explore. Government assistance should be there in different shapes and forms and structures. However, independence should always be key. So I think that with that said, the notion of flag carrier, that is actually changing, and it actually might be private businesses that carry those flags, and I think they should be supported.
Because no, I think that, I mean, you've hit the nail right on its head, but the challenge is sometimes, you know, you see all this pomp and pageantry when you're having a national airline and the conversation, etc. But it's different from just having, you know, having the pride of having the national airline. And then it's also a different situation when you see the airline as enabler, but then you are willing to put in a certain amount of investment. Because if you look at the case of, for example, Emirates and some of the Gulf carriers, you know, in the documentary that they have that in mind. But in the course of time, you know, it has proven to be a worthy investment. Anyway, let's zoom in on SAA. The situation at SAA now. What is the current situation of South African Airlines?
So, you know, I am a former two-time employee of SAA, as you know, and I used to head up the network planning division a couple of years ago. I treat with caution on this discussion, not because of SAA matters, because I'm not a political analyst. I'm an aviation person. And my personal opinion is that SAA has become a political matter. And in my view, it's long past the parameters of airline economics. With that said though, state-owned entities as a corporate structure, which the South African government use and many governments use globally, they implement this model to advance economic transformation, industrialization, import subsidization, amongst other elements, to kind of enables certain sectors that are deemed strategic. I think the difficulty with this type of model is that conflict arises when lines of good governance are crossed, and that I can put my hand on my heart and say that has long been breached time and time and time again, and it's part of the reason why SAA is in the situation that it is in now. So with South African Airways, my personal view is that this new airline, whatever it'll look like, is probably only going to start flying 2022. That's my personal forecast. I do think that they will be entering, whatever the size of entity and the model of entity, it will be entering into a market that will be changing quite a bit. Of course, airlines such as Air Link and SAFAir have taken the opportunity of, you know, reduced capacity, not just by SAA, but also Comair, who had their own debt bubble that was expected to explode. They've taken the advantage that two major carriers are out of the market, and now they're launching routes and driving capacity in order to stimulate demand. And I think it's quite smart, because strategically, when SAA comes back, they will have to fight a lot harder for that previous market share that they had. And then the final point is there has been, a knock in customer confidence. I think even from a media perspective, we almost have SAA fatigue, because it's been such a large part of national discourse for many years. So to summarize my view on SAA, as an airline person, I think that it will come back. If it does come back, it'll come back probably 2022 at a much smaller scale. It'll probably be competing a lot harder with regional carriers. Those have taken the advantage of having them out of the market for a year plus. But I think that politically, it's another matter. And there are definitely a lot of debates that are happening across different quarters in our political landscape.
But if you were to advise the government, and I mean, not just South Africa, but other governments, or which routes they should go, in terms of national careers and how it can be viable, what will be that thing that, you think they should, your top three that they have to concentrate on?
I must say that I don't think there's lack of advice for national governments, but political agendas are often conflicting. And unfortunately, SOEs become the soccer balls rather, and the collateral damage on the pitch of politics. But to answer your question, I would like to focus on two elements. Firstly, governance, and secondly, different ownership structures. I think my first piece of advice is that airlines cannot be run from cabinet position. They just aren't good examples of this anyway. I think that government shareholders, and I'm using that word very intentionally, that governments are not just playing the role of government, they're playing the role of a government shareholder. When they invest in airlines or aviation. I think government shareholders need to spend time developing more conducive environments for the entire aviation system to succeed. And this includes both private business and government business. And there's a lot of, as I've mentioned before, on policy, infrastructure, and financing, there's a lot of policy gaps to address. But I do think that governments are inherently conflicted when they are shareholders of airlines. Why? Because most markets have more than one airline operating that isn't a national carrier. Now, how do you separate your role as government in enabling an environment for all economic players and also generating return on your investment? And I do think an inherent conflict exists in that relationship, which is why I push the point of governance. Governments need to implement good governance models across all key role players, including the shareholder, board, and executive management. And they need to stick to this. And if it's not stuck to, there must be accountability. And we have seen how this has just been disrespected across the region in many, many respects. My second piece of advice is ownership can have different models to achieve the same thing. And what I mean is that I think it's time that governments across the region start looking at different ownership structures if they are interested in investing in African aviation and the sector directly. If you look at Cape Verde's government, they've got into an arrangement with Iceland Air for this new entity. Of course, Namibia will have to come up with a new model if the government is so interested in having an interest in aviation. I think there are various ownership structures that can be explored, which allow for effective government ownership, but also bringing in the private sector, which has its own stimulating effect. The problem is there political willingness to let go of that power, that absolute power that exists in many respects? So I think if I were to advise governments across the region, it's really explore different ownership structures that benefit all parties, including yourself as a shareholder, and really respect governance. Because if governance isn't respected, there's no way that the sector will move forward at all.
Okay. No, thank you so much, Ojo. Now, you know, the case of Ethiopian, undisputedly, they've been the, you know, the kings or queens of the, or, you know, in the skies here in Africa. But there are also some concerns about the fact that its leadership, you know, in terms of now acquisitions, and we know what happened to Malawi Airlines and other few things. Is there a genuine consensus of a monopoly in, you know, in the African aviation space if, for example, Ethiopian are to support, you know, the other national carriers, and or if there's business to be made out, you know, after all, I mean, this is a well and run, and, you know, it has lived its, in its 75 years of existence. I think that we can be proud as Africa as one of the carriers or the carrier that we can take to the world. What do you make of those concerns of a monopoly, you know, a monopoly by them, you know, in the African space?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting point. And I think the case of Ethiopian Airlines is one that will go down in the history book. So just my initial comment is that, you know, given that Ethiopian Airlines no longer produce publicly available financial statements, I think the last one they released was FY 17-18, it's really difficult to provide an independent opinion of how all of their moves translate into performance. We simply just don't know. We can only rely on what the entity says. Of course, you know, we can derive and we can see through data that, you know, we can see what happens on a capacity level, passenger demand level, revenue level. But with all of this said, I think Ethiopian is a great example because they've been able to achieve the following things successfully. Firstly, a sound governance structure, to my earlier point, with clear delegation of authority and a commercial decision framework. And I think the second piece, which is just as commendable, is that Ethiopian Airlines, through its government, has been able to strategically place aviation and understand its role that it plays in that economy. And those are two incredibly important points that actually follow some of the best practices of, you know, the Middle Eastern carriers, Turkish Airlines, around this whole of state of aviation approach, which means coordinating economic activities that support the strategic sector. Of course, with that said, though, giving the entity the ability to make its commercial decisions. On the question of monopoly, I can understand why a lot of countries, their governments and airlines are sensitive to this, because Ethiopian Airlines is successful in many respects. But as the case is with any merger and acquisition activity, there's generally one party that has stronger bargaining power compared to the other party. You know, we could frankly say that there's generally a stronger party and a weaker party. And I don't think that it's difficult to find strategic aviation gems that need equity across the region. It's just about whether that equity partner is willing to carry the risk. What is smart about all of the acquisitions that they've made, you know, across Malawian, A-Sky, Chad, being involved in Zambia Airways new development, is that these acquisitions are actually consolidating the regional footprint of Ethiopian Airlines' traditional network and ultimately funneling traffic through Addis Ababa to then enhance the reach and the feed of their network model, which of course we know is global. I don't think the question of monopoly can be raised, because if there's a willing seller, there should be a willing buyer, which in this case, Ethiopian Airlines is the one. And we must also acknowledge that when they invest in these airlines, they are taking up a significant amount of risk. So I think it's just a matter of perhaps bruised egos. And if countries want to invest in their own entities, then they should go ahead and do so.
Okay. Now, let's come to the African Continental Free Trade Area or Agreement. What's aviation role? I mean, I make reference to an article that, you know, our good friend Richard Tre wrote about how you know, aviation will be key in in accelerating that economic development that we want. Unpack for us what the African Union or the African Union Commission can do with respect to aviation to have the desired result. Because we've seen, and hopefully AFCTA should be, you know, a better way to growing our economic potential in Africa.
I think first and foremost, I must say this as a business person and as an African citizen, I am so proud of the work that has been done with the AFCTA. It is an example of what African agency looks like. And this goes beyond economics and is even philosophical. I think now is the time that Africa is saying, what do we want for ourselves? How do we identify ourselves as players within our region and globally? So I'm so proud of the work that has been done by the Secretariat and all role players with regards to AFCTA. With regards to the role of aviation, I think that, you know, AFCTA in many respects, I wouldn't say it's a non-starter, but the promises of this agreement and this area will not be fulfilled if aviation doesn't play its part. And as we all know, SATM is a pillar of this. I think that SATM presents the best opportunity for increased coordination and partnership under a more enabling environment. And I personally hope to see more joint ventures, M&A activity, and partnerships, you know, from commercial to up until ownership level amongst carriers, you know, in an effort to consolidate networks and resources. Unfortunately, though, I think SATM does not have a lot of buy-in from many stakeholders. And I say this as a former airline executive, of course, and I'm personally quite disappointed in the various associations and structures around the continent, because the buy-in has been consistent for years. And I do not think that there is enough work in socializing and operationalizing what this means. I have sat in forum after forum, year in, year out, presentation after presentation. And I will be quite controversial in my next point in that it's effectively the same people saying the same thing. There's no diversity of people, there's no diversity of ideas. And unfortunately, a lot of these associations, in my humble opinion, have just become political appendices of various structures and political dynamics in Africa. And they essentially just become avenues of political patronage. So the core work, I do not feel, is being done. Some airlines and their governments have valid concerns. Some airlines and the governments don't. But I do think that we cannot just simply brush it with a brush of protectionism, because at the end of the day, SATM is a policy that is made at a government level for businesses that have commercial objectives to implement. I believe there's an inherent conflict. I think another issue with SATM is that it emphasizes that the mechanism of bilateral air service agreements should effectively be annulled. And I do not think that is pragmatic, because a bilateral air service agreement is not necessarily a bad thing. It is also a mechanism that talks to foreign policy. And I think that countries are very apprehensive of saying, we don't have any other mechanism to barter with country A and country B. Instead, as country A, we're bartering with 52 other countries. It just, in my opinion, doesn't make sense. And I say this as someone who's been in over 20 bilateral air service negotiations across the years. So I think, to boil it down to your question, people really need not just talk, but people actually need to listen to people's concerns across stakeholders. And it's just frankly disappointing that we are almost walking on eggshells, tiptoeing around the same thing, going to the same conferences, drinking the same coffee, but we're not actually getting to the bottom line of what the real concerns are. And the concerns are that I am going to lose, and we can acknowledge, yes, country A, you're going to lose, but this is what you're going to gain. I don't think that work has been done.
Okay. Finally, how do you? What's your advice for African tourism board or you know, destination marketing companies and their relationship with the aviation sector? Because often than not, they're working in silos, and so you typically, I mean, some of them are doing well, but you typically would think that if, for example, an airline or a carrier would like to start a new route or something, there's always a conversation that, you know, needs to happen sometime between the destination, you know, marketing companies or the tourism boards, and then even the airport company, and then the airline. But we seem not to have that party. How would you advise going forward? Because intra-African travels is still seen as a cliche. And you know, if anything at all, COVID has taught us that if we don't build resilience, you know, starting from our original domestic markets, then it will be difficult for the tourism sector, but much more so for the economies of Africa. How do we communicate between the tourism people and the aviation people?
Definitely. I think this is such an important point. And again, in one respect, I'm grateful for what this period has taught us, because what we've realized is that, you know, people don't fly to airports and they don't fly on routes, they fly to destinations. And I personally feel that the role of DMOs has been elevated, and as it should be, because a DMO's responsibility is to coordinate every single piece in this ecosystem and communicate it in a friendly and attractive message to people that they're trying to attract. And I think the role of marketing just as a function has elevated even more. Even if we look at the way health authorities have had to communicate, this is all marketing. So the role of marketing has actually been elevated. And I think in our industry, that is the case even more. I do believe that DMOs play a critical role in this ecosystem. And it again goes back to how are we coordinated? What I find so confusing and ironic is that most countries that have, you know, the national carriers also have national or provincial municipal destination management organizations. But you find that at the background, the planning isn't happening with the suppliers of tourism, of which airlines, airports form part of that. I do also want to suggest that DMOs, of course, depending on their structure, they actually develop route development offices or bureaus that sit in a business development or commercial function. And I think those offices and areas need to then coordinate with the rest of the sector and almost be a conduit on matters that are being raised in the aviation sector. Because I do note, again, I'm very much an airline person, we get into our own world and we plan in our own way. And I think it's just about bridging those gaps by having people responsible for talking to the different suppliers of tourism products and infrastructure.
Okay. You know, traditional with our podcast is for you to tell us about yourself and what you do and how you've been holding yourself during this difficult time of COVID and everything that you want us to know about who Ogaga Ojo is. Over to you, sir.
This is always a very difficult question for me, because I think my next question is, what exactly would you like to know? But I think perhaps for those who don't know me, I always get questions as to how I got into aviation. And I always say, look, I fell into aviation. I was blessed to be in the right space and time to get an opportunity in the sector that has given me my career. I've been blessed to work very much in the network planning and fleet space, as well as strategy and research for various airlines, both here in South Africa and globally. I worked for Qatar Airways, where I was based there for about 2 years. So I've really seen, and I've had the opportunity of seeing quite a bit of you know, really interesting transactions, very interesting projects around aviation, both in Africa and globally. And I think what I love about the industry is how it is so connected to economic activity and how it's almost a catalyst, a backbone, whichever term you want to use, for significant economic activities, including trade and tourism. I think on a personal level, I'm very much involved in developing our next generation, because I think that this industry has also showed me that there aren't linear ways of moving, quote unquote, up the ladder. And I've been really grateful in my career to have had people who invested in me and gave me opportunities and supported me to get to where I am today. And I think that is one thing that I invest a lot of my time in giving back. So I'm a mentor to people, to businesses. I sit on boards of NGOs that really drive youth development for Africa's next frontier. What has gotten me through this period has been just telling myself that this too shall pass. It certainly hasn't been easy, but I hold on to that faith, and I'm very much about forward motion being the most important thing in my life. I will not sit and be stagnant irrespective of the environment. We must move and we must adapt. And I think that is what has kept me through.
Okay, definitely. I mean, we will survive and we will come back, you know, stronger. Well, Gaga Ojo, thank you so much for your time and for sharing with us this insightful and fascinating story in the aviation space of Africa.
Thank you so much. And Kojo, if I may just take the opportunity, I want to use this platform that you provided to just acknowledge the resilience of all professionals in our industry. I think this has not been an easy flight path. It has not been an easy journey. The extent of loss, both personal and professional, is quite palpable. And I just want to take a moment to acknowledge the thousands of aviation employees, and millions actually. And I'd actually like to leave this talk with a quote by the visionary Ghanaian Patrick Ewea, who says, "The ability to confront complex problems and to design solutions to those problems, this ability to create is the most empowering thing that can happen to an individual." And I think that it is such a relevant quote for what we are going through as an industry, but we are going to be the ones that provide the solutions for Africa's next frontier. Thank you so much, and thank you to the listeners as well.
Thank you so much, Ogaga.